The Economic Development Housing Budget Division for April 22nd, 2009 will come to order. My apologies for the confusion right now. We are having trouble getting chief authors to come up to the committee because of committees that are going on elsewhere in other places, as well as Senator Bonhoff is not in the state, I don't believe. So Senator Sparks is a co-author on the bills, and he'll do the presenting of the bills. And so bear with us as far as the chief author's understanding of what the bill is doing, and we'll do our best to have counsel help out and witnesses to help out and explain the bill. Senator Vandeveer.
We've done a lot of bills, Mr. Chair. Maybe we should skip a few.
Well, these bills will actually move to the Finance Committee from here, because the deadline that we just did our omnibus bill on was just for the omnibus bill. It's not for these bills in Finance. So we can move these around a little bit. Senator Sparks, did you need something from staff here?
Mr. Chair, when we get going, if we could get a couple copies of the A5 and A6 amendment for the witness, that would be helpful.
Okay, Senator Scheidt, Sparks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I know this is an extremely busy time, but I'm pleased to present Senate File 2010 on behalf of Senator Scheidt. This deals with the Value Guarantee Pilot Program. We do have a delete all E5 amendment, Mr. Chair. It's been language has been worked out that will allow the program to be possible. And if members would like to discuss it, if you'd like to put it on first, that's fine. Otherwise, I do have Mr. Larry Bigler with me, the former president of Farm Credit Bank, and he's going to help us walk through the bill.
Why don't we walk through the amendment first and then just give us an idea of what it does. Do you understand it, Mr. Bigler, or should I have counsel do this?
What?
You just wrote it, huh? No.
Mr. Chair, we could ask Ms. Orr to come out with the Housing Finance Agency, and she could help us a little bit too.
Who?
Who's amending this?
What are you doing?
Is this a delete everything?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr.
Chair.
Ms. Orr, do you understand the amendment?
I think so.
Yeah.
I wasn't planning on doing this, so bear with me, please. I'm Tanya Orr from the Housing Finance Agency. The amendment is a delete everything amendment, and it retains the essential components of the bill that has gone through other committees, which is the creation of a program to provide a guarantee for the value of a home purchased after July 1st and before June 30th of 2011. The guarantee is to try and set a floor earlier than the market might otherwise set the floor for home values. The idea is that the Housing Finance Agency, that a home buyer would apply to the Housing Finance Agency for a guarantee. The guarantee would be the amount of down payment and, I believe, principal payments that have been made during the life during the 5-year guarantee period. And if at the end of 5 years the home does not have the same value it had at the purchase date, then the homeowner would be paid the lesser of their down payment plus principal payments, or the difference between the purchase price and the appraised value at the end of the 5-year period. The home has to remain available for the entire 5 years. It has to be occupied by the purchaser for the entire 5 years in order to be eligible for the guarantee. The original bill had the homeowner transferring title to the Housing Finance Agency and then title being offered to the bank. That provision is gone. So there is not a transfer of title. So the homeowner would continue to own the home. It would be worth less, but they would have been compensated for at least whatever lost value they have during the first 5 years. The idea, the concept is that this would be an incentive to people who might otherwise be worried about buying a house now and then having it lose value. So to get people into the market at an earlier point than they otherwise would. The other changes are from the first engrossment, is it first engrossment, second engrossment, first engrossment, are that there's a, we're given the authority to check to make sure that the home buyer hasn't been convicted of fraud or had their license revoked for a real estate or broker's license revoked from the Department of Commerce, so that we're trying to make sure that we don't have flippers being part of this guarantee program. There's a maximum home value. It has to be a minimum of $75,000 and a maximum of $300,000. There's a maximum amount, I believe, of down payment assistance. It has to be at least 3.5% of the purchase price, and it can't exceed $25,000. There is an appropriation in the out years. Fiscal year 15, I think, is when it starts, of up to $25 million. If this works, there would be no claims on that money. As I said, the appropriation isn't until really the out years.
Is that what it is?
The other changes from the... from the bill, the first engrossment are to clarify things like the appraisal has to be done by somebody who's licensed and bonded in a professional appraisal, and if at the end of the 5 years there's a claim for the guarantee, the homeowner has to obtain the housing finance agency would obtain an appraisal. If the homeowner is not happy with the appraisal, they can pay for their own, and then we'll average the two, and that's what we work off in terms of figuring out what the guarantee payment would be. There is an application fee that is intended to cover the agency's costs in administering the guarantee fee, and there's a small appropriation for the agency to start the program up. It is intended to start July 1st, 2009. And I think those are the highlights.
And the agency's role here would be more to just kind of cooperate with the program. Is that correct?
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Okay, so you don't have an opinion one way or another whether or not you think it's a good idea.
Mr. Chair, we understand the concept. This is something that was done in the 80s during the farm crisis. We know that it worked then. We recognize that we're in an incredibly bad situation in terms of the housing market now. We think that that it makes sense to explore as many creative ideas as we can, because I don't think there's any one idea that's going to restore the faith in the housing market, and that's sort of essential to getting the economy back going.
Okay.
And Mr. Chair, I'd like to thank Ms. Orr for walking through it, and maybe now we can have Mr. Bigler explain why he believes that this program will actually work.
Thank you, Mr. Bigler. Welcome to the committee. Please say your name and title for the record.
My name is Larry Bigler. I was in the 80s the president of the Farm Credit Bank of St. Paul, and saw that bank through the farm crisis of the 80s. This bill, with the technical changes described by Ms. Orr, has a lot of the same features that allowed us to turn around the Farm Credit Bank back in 86 and 87. That bank had 1 million acres of land in inventory, and farmland values were falling dramatically, just as what we're seeing today in the housing market. There was actually no end in sight. What we did was we significantly increased the asking price of the farms that we had in inventory, but guaranteed that if you bought a farm from us at the end of 5 years, you could get your money back if you wanted it. In 1987, we sold 810,000 acres of farmland, and 5 years later, not a square inch of land was returned to the bank. What that allowed us to do was, once we established the floor in farmland values across the entire upper Midwest, it allowed us to go in and restructure all the loans, thousands, over 10,000 loans we had in foreclosure. In 1987, we were able to restructure 7,400 of those loans to keep families on the farm. And 5 years later, over 90% of those restructures survived. Contrasted to today, restructures that are being made in the housing sector on loans, 60% fail within the first 60 days. I maintain the reason they're failing is that home values are continuing to decline. And once you restructure a loan, 60 days later, your home is worth $10,000 less than it was when you restructured, you stop making payment. We have to set the floor, and we think in these five counties, with monthly reporting to the legislature on where we were, we'll benchmark where home values were, the mean values in those counties, and report monthly whether or not we have any success by making a commitment to a purchaser that if you buy this property and it is worth less 5 years from now than it is today, you can get pro rata your down payment back. We think that this program will have the same impact that we had with our success in turning around the farm credit system in the 80s. And that program was ultimately written into law with the help of Senator Boswich, and is still being used by the farm credit system today on how to restructure farm loans.
So it works for farms, and so it might work for homes now.
Well, the parallels are the same. Farms are an income-producing unit. But if you take a look at a home today, and I've witnessed this, you can buy a home today, make a small amount of improvements, and rent it out and have it cash flow. That's the first time that that's ever happened in my lifetime. In addition to that, you can go in a subdivision, buy a lot, have a developer give you an estimate on the cost to build you a house, like the one next door that's for sale. You can buy the house next door for sale at 20% less than the reproduction cost of new construction today. That, too, has never happened in my lifetime. Clearly, the pendulum has swung too far. What we have to do is something to shock the system by saying that and slowly bring it back more toward equilibrium. The mean value of homes in the metropolitan area at the beginning of 2008 were $237,000. The mean value today is less than $150,000. Clearly, it has swung too far. Coming to this meeting this afternoon, I heard on the radio that
the top price
Realty Track just announced this morning the first quarter foreclosures in the state of Minnesota, and they were up 71% from first quarter of 2008. We have to do something to stabilize home values and give people an opportunity to stay in their home and the ability to restructure their loans. I maintain that this bill, with the technical changes that have been made by the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency, will do that.
Why aren't people just buying homes like mad because the value has gone down so far?
You buy it. The values have been going down about $5,000 a month. Why not wait till next month and buy it for $5,000 less? That's some of the mentality. Mm-hmm. And with this program, there's no advantage in waiting, because if it goes down in value, your down payment is guaranteed and you shouldn't care.
Senators, who wants to go first here? Fishbach.
Mr. Chair, and maybe Mr. Bigler, I throw it out to whoever, but the pilot program areas, how were those decided? How were those determined?
Mr. Bigler.
That's a good question. They weren't picked out of thin air. What we tried to do was to get urban and rural, and we put together the information for a number of counties. In fact, in the beginning, we thought we would set up a pilot project in five counties in southwestern Minnesota. But when we took a look at the numbers of homes in foreclosure and the decline in real estate values, we felt that these five counties would give us the best representative sample across section of the state. But there's really not a whole lot of scientific work that went into that selection, other than getting it back in the numbers to see if we had a fairly representative sample of the state.
Senator Olds.
Oh, sorry, did you have
No, that's fine. I do have some other questions, though. I have other questions, not specific to that. Okay.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chair, and I guess I'm a little unsure. Oh, now Senator Scheid is there. Look at that. She appeared all of a sudden. So,
welcome to the committee, Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Fishbach, thank you. I was down in taxes, and I will go back there, but I thought you probably would like the author of the bill to be here.
We'll keep you here as long as you want to stay.
Senator Sparks is a hero.
Well, and Mr. Chair, Senator Scheid, he was doing such a wonderful job calling up witnesses to answer the questions he was doing. But Mr. Chair, Senator Scheid, I guess I'm a little confused. Maybe somebody mentioned it. Is the money is coming, if someone redeems their guarantee, the money is coming out of the general fund up to $25 million? Is that, I mean, it's just coming out of the, is it just appropriated out of there whenever we need it? Because there's an appropriation for administrative costs, and then there's the application fee, and we're creating a special revenue fund, but I guess I'm not entirely clear as to where we're getting the money. If all, I mean, could happen, all the guarantees come within the a year or something. And
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Jensen knows the answer if you don't.
Oh, okay.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I mean, it doesn't show on here because it's 5 years out, for one thing. Is that correct, Mr. Jensen? So,
Mr. Chairman and members, that's correct. Also, it calls it a statutory appropriation, which means it would be an open and standing appropriation available whenever it's needed.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Jensen, $25 million could come out of there without any action by the legislature? Out of the general? I mean, potentially?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's correct.
And then, Mr. Chair, Senator Scheid, final question. How much are we going to appropriate for the administration costs? It's a blank line right now. Is there any clue as to?
Mr. Chairman and members, the fiscal note has $70,000 for the administration costs. I'm wondering, though, is that fiscal year 9 or fiscal year 10? The bill is silent for which year the agency needs the money. Is Ms. Orr here to help us with that?
Obviously.
Mr. Chair,
Ms. Orr.
Senator Fishbach, this was an estimate of what it will take between now and July 1st. If we're going to get a program up and going and available to people July 1st, it will take a fair amount of effort and a concentrated period of time. There will be, I believe, computer issues, accounting issues, and so I roughly estimated that it would take about 1,500 hours of a bunch of different people's time to get this all organized. You know, until we started, it's hard to know. But that was my rough estimate. In the future, The idea is, as I understand it, that the application fee would cover our administrative costs, which will be mostly an accounting matter.
Mr. Chairman, and
Mr. Jensen.
On page 3, line 31, we should add $70,000 is appropriated in fiscal year 9.
Okay, let's incorporate that into the amendment. We haven't.
And Mr. Chair?
We haven't moved the amendment.
There's some handwriting. Do we need to do from the general fund? Is that need to be? There was some handwriting underneath there with like a little arrow. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Maybe that was just someone. We don't need to do it? Okay.
Mr. Chairman, we should do that.
Oh,
from
we should.
From the general fund in fiscal year 9.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Is it Bigler? Could you repeat those two numbers for me that you gave us earlier? You said a year ago the mean value, or a couple years ago the mean value of a home compared to today. What were those two numbers again?
$237,000 in the metropolitan area. And I have not seen large numbers yet.
So what we did is,
but it was at the end of February in the 150,000 range.
Okay, Mr. Chair, Mr. Bigler, now is that just based on sales from numbers? Because that would be a drop of like a 30% drop in value of homes in the metro area. Is that what you're?
That is right.
I haven't. Okay.
You got it right.
And Mr. Chair, okay, I just wanted to confirm those numbers, but the concern that I have with this proposal is that you essentially have the large cities in the state, Minneapolis, St. Paul, Rochester, Duluth, and St. Cloud, having a home value guarantee that the whole state is going to subsidize. And it seems to me that the unintended consequence of this might be taking people from all the rest of the state, all the rural communities, and moving our population to some place where they're going to have a guarantee. And if home values don't turn around, which, you know, I think they will, it could end up costing all of the taxpayers an amount of money that would be subsidizing just about, well, probably more than half the population of the state, but at the expense of the communities that can probably least afford to pay for it. So it just seems to me like, and Senator Scheid knows that I have supported almost every proposal there has been to try to address this mortgage, the mortgage problem that we're facing today, but I just think if this is an idea that we should do, then we should do it for everyone, not just for the larger areas.
Good question, and I understand exactly what you're saying, but what we have proposed here is a pilot program. And if, in fact, we are able to demonstrate on a monthly reporting basis that we were able to stabilize home values in those five counties, that perhaps the legislature, when it meets again in January, because of the success of the program, might want to take it statewide.
Which is the point of going small at the beginning. Yeah, and Senator Scheid.
And Mr. Chairman, I was going to say, and we know we'll pick up some rural areas with St. Louis and homes. I understand wanting to go statewide. I think some people are balking at $25 million. I think, you know, it gives me pause.
Well, Mr.
That's
Chair,
a lot of money.
Mr. Chair, these communities are not rural.
No. Mr. Chairman.
St. Louis is.
If you use the federal definition, none of them fit.
Mr. Chairman, I don't name communities.
No.
These are counties.
Yeah, these are counties.
Well, but Mr. Chair and Senator Scheid, a metropolitan county on the federal definition is a county that contains a community of 70,000 or more. These are all metropolitan by that definition.
And Mr. Chair,
Senator Olson.
I would just say that if we have a pilot project that's going to address probably 60% of the population of the state, it isn't really a pilot project. It begins to feel more like favoring, you know, the larger communities at the cost of everyone. And so I just think that, you know, if you look at the number of homes contained in these counties compared to the rest of the state, I would be surprised if you aren't looking at half the households or more in the state.
More than half.
So,
The $25 million we've dissected and have come up with possible guarantees on between 4,500 and 5,500 homes before you hit the $25 million maximum that we'd be able to guarantee here. So it's, although we're covering a lot of the metropolitan area, we're not covering very many homes. But we think that we can, with 4,500 to 5,500 guarantees, establish some stability in those pilot areas. If, in fact, we're able to do that, then the legislature could readdress it in January and take it statewide.
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chair, we only come back to session once a year, and it seems to me that if we want a pilot program because it's limited to the number of homes, then we should at least make it available potentially to everyone statewide. You're going to have maybe 4,000 homes, but you're going to have 4,000 homes in the metropolitan areas of our state. And excluding all of the rest of the state, even though the whole state has to pick up the tab potentially. And I just don't find that to be a fair. I mean, I have a small community in my less than 1,000 population in my district. And last year, there were 5 house sales in that little town. 4 of them were foreclosures, 4 out of 5. So small communities are being hit just like big communities are being hit. And I guess I just think that, you know, when we have a pilot project and it's and we're just looking at a small little area to see if something works, that's one thing. But if we're looking at over 60% of the state population-wise being included in the area that can apply for this and the other 40% not, that doesn't seem reasonable to me.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, you know, I think if we resolved, if we prevented foreclosure by raising values so people could refinance or whatever it would have taken, let's say this, we had done this and we had been able to save those 4 homes. I don't know how those 4 foreclosures impacted the values of other homes. One of the communities I represent had a little over 1,000 foreclosures in 2008. 1,000. Let me tell you, every neighborhood in the community I live in is affected by that. And I think it's the concentration factor here that's really important when you're talking on a limited basis. I would love to have it be for everybody in Minnesota. I think that would be great. I just don't think we have, you know, we've tried to find the money. There are small communities in Olmsted County, in Stearns, and in St. Louis, for sure there are, that would be eligible for this. But I think what we need to do is get a floor on the values where you have large concentrations of large numbers of properties that are tanking, and it is still a downward trend. It's just not, it didn't just go off the cliff. It went off the cliff,
well, and
you know, several months ago, but now it's continuing to go down.
And Senator Scheid and Senator Olson, I think the difference between what Senator Olson is saying and what the bill is proposing is that if we go to the small town where you're at and we refinance all 3 of those houses, we have 100% reliability factor of the program. If we finance 3 houses out of 1,000 in Senator Scheid's area, we're proving that the program probably isn't working very well. And so it's, you're getting a better indication when there's big numbers than if you get it from the small numbers. And I think we're trying to find out whether or not the program would actually work. And that's why there's a pilot project where there's big concentrations of foreclosures. That's, I think that's the idea. And there, the intent is that if it does work in the short term, that we come back and do it statewide. I mean, that's what, is that what I'm hearing?
Mr. Chairman, yes, I think that would be, you know, that would be appropriate for us to consider that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Scheid. And here's just a thought further on that. I understand what the chair is saying, and I tend to agree with you. I think you have to have a you have to try to make an impact. I'm not sure if I support the pilot program, and I may regret saying this, but Mr. Beegler, you stated that there really was no scientific approach to why you chose these areas, and I think maybe that's where some of this concern you're hearing is. It seems sort of random, and you know, there are the big population centers. Why don't you focus instead, and maybe people will think I'm being parochial because I represent Wright County, and we have the highest rate of foreclosure in the state. Why don't we focus on the, if we're going to do a pilot program, why not focus on the areas of biggest concern or the large, highest rates? There you've got your numbers, and if you can arrest home foreclosures in those areas, well, then you have some proof. Maybe it's the randomness of the selection of the areas, and I'm wondering why you didn't choose the counties. I mean, there are some higher counties with high rates here, well, but your highest rate counties are not these counties.
Mr.
Sherburne, it's Wright, it's...
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, this isn't just about, I mean, the thrust of this ultimately, obviously, is to prevent foreclosure, but this has to do with values, and I don't know what the numbers are in the different counties that we've chosen for the pilot area. I don't know where the values have plummeted the most, but we're trying to get a floor in on the values,
right.
And so that there will be activity, people will get loans, banks will make them, and people will be able to refinance if they're underwater, close to being underwater, where they owe more on their home than its value is today.
And Senator Scheid, I fully appreciate that, but then maybe we should have some numbers on these counties and make a better selection instead of just a random five counties or six counties, whatever we're doing here. I mean, then let's look at where the home value is. If that's then let's have some criteria for the selection of the areas. There doesn't appear to be any criteria here for these areas.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Scheid. And what I was going to say is, you know, this is the debate between metro and rural that we always tend to have, whether we're talking about percentages or whether we're talking about gross numbers. I mean, you couldn't have a higher mortgage foreclosure rate than the 80% foreclosure rate I'm talking about in the community I referenced. There's nowhere in the metro that has an 80% of their home sales are foreclosures. Well, I shouldn't say nowhere. There might be an isolated community, but not by a whole city. And so, you know, again, it's if you're talking gross numbers, of course you have many more because you're a much larger population. If you're talking percentage of foreclosures, there are probably smaller communities that are hit harder, where if you put a floor under two or three sales, you could make a huge difference in that little community as compared to two or three sales in the whole metro area. So I guess all I'm saying is it all depends on how you look at it. And, of course, depending on where we represent, we tend to look at it from the point of view that, you know, that impacts our area. And so, in fairness, I think if we're going to spend this kind of money, we should find a way to do this more in a statewide basis or based on some criteria.
Senator Vanderveer. Senator Vanderveer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Scheid, I have a question. Are you going to start a new requirement that appraisers be bonded?
Is that in here?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman. Because we've had issues. Yes, we do. We've had issues, I think, with appraisals.
So you're going to require that they be bonded? Currently, they're not. They have, you know, as far as I know, but so that is a new, that is a intended here. Also had another question, if I could. Has anyone looked at or thought, I mean, about the taxpayers in this? I think they've actually been a little abused lately at the hands of government guarantees, government loan guarantees. As we look across the country, they've ended up guaranteeing a lot more than they anticipated. And did you use the word open and standing appropriation?
Yeah.
That's a interesting concept. I think we're up to probably $2 trillion on Fannie and Freddie with their open and standing.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, I mean, Fannie and Freddie didn't get any money to homeowners. This has to do with homeowners. This has to do, I mean, if you're going to compare this to that, this isn't a bailout as such. This isn't just handing over a blank check and saying, we hope you start making loans that are sound again. I mean, it's a lot more direct. And so I don't think it's exactly fair to compare it. And, yes, it is a lot of money. And a lot of Minnesotans right now, well, I say to people, if we want to take the conversation to the issue of foreclosure, it's an issue for every one of us. It's coming to a house next door to you. And when it does come to a house next door to you, it has an immediate effect and impact on the value of your home. And I'm living in it's living proof. I mean, if I could bring my tax statement in and show you the impact in my whole community. But I'll tell you, one of the representatives in our Senate district lives next door. Her house is probably worth $200,000 in the last few years. I'd say 3 years ago it was worth $200,000. Her neighbor's house is larger, same kind of floor plan, but larger. Very similar situation. It's being listed right now by the bank for $62,000. It's pretty breathtaking when you're sitting next door to the property that just took your house down, you know, the value of your home down with it or brings it down. So this is happening all over our state, I understand, but it is happening in particular, concentrated areas. I think that the issue of which counties, I mean, I guess we have to have 87 counties in here. And
or 10.
Or 10. And however many counties are represented on your committee, Mr. Chairman.
Mr.
I am just telling you, I think the concentration is a real factor here in being able to stabilize values. That's what you're looking at.
Mr. Chair and Senator Scheid, I don't, I'm not saying that you're doing a bailout here per se, but you are putting the taxpayer on the hook for an unknown amount by making these guarantees as to the not only that the loan will be good, but that the property will resell at least the price that it was sold for, which is actually a much more risky venture than a loan guarantee. But I also would say that I'm not begging to get into this. My area, I would beg you not to get into this program. I don't think we are experienced enough in this, and I don't think we should just be deciding by fighting with each other over who can bankrupt the state the fastest or destroy their credit rating. One of the two. And is there no consequence to us doing this for our credit rating? Is that
Senator Scheid?
Mr. Chairman, we did ask that question of Dr. Stinson, and no, there. I'm trying to see what the language was, but they don't. Let's see. I had the language, the quote. They do not anticipate a negative impact to the state. I can tell you, I mean, I think this is a bold plan. And I don't, Larry, did you share with them what happened at Farm Credit Bank?
Yes.
So they know that. And
I would like to share some more numbers with you. Last year, 26,265 homes in this state went into foreclosure, okay? At the end of 2008, 64,643 mortgages in this state were underwater. 14.6% of all mortgages in the state were underwater at the end of the year. I mentioned earlier that foreclosures are up 71% so far this year over 2008. Families are losing their homes. What we are presenting is a concept that isn't new. This was executed in the 80s with a great success. What we're asking is to pilot that same concept to see if we can once again, as we did in the 80s here in Minnesota, we set the model for the rest of the country to follow, restructuring farm debt to keep families on the farm. What we have here is a model we'd like to pilot to see if we can keep families in their homes. It may or may not work,
yeah.
But by having a pilot, we can concentrate the efforts in a smaller amount of geography, better able to communicate the program in those isolated areas, monitor each area to see if this concept works.
Senator Kielash.
A couple of clarifying questions. I don't see the word foreclosure in here at all. This is a home purchaser pilot program, not a foreclosure necessarily, although people in foreclosure could use it to help save their homes, I think. I'm not sure if that's really that's my question is it really for foreclosures or is it for new buyers that are setting the bottom of the market?
Mr. Chairman, no. The money would go to purchasers of homes. You're right. There's not money in here to give people to prevent foreclosure. The idea of guaranteeing the value for a purchaser for the first 5 years is to get that floor in there so that values stop dropping and people who are able to refinance, well, who couldn't or can't refinance right now because they're underwater, if you get values moving up again, they'll be able to refinance perhaps and avoid foreclosure. And so that, I think, that's where the foreclosure piece comes in. And then
Mr. Bueller.
Mr. Bigler might want to add to that.
If I can just answer that. A little bit different way. You're right. This is not. But what it does is that if you are able to stabilize prices, people will stop walking away from their homes. This concept was sent to the Joint Center on Housing Studies at Harvard recently. And we have an email back from them, and I'm meeting with them the second week in May. But this is what Eric Bilski, executive director of the Joint Center of Housing Studies at Harvard, said in an exchange of emails to us, that the Minnesota plan could keep existing home buyers from walking away from mortgages because they would no longer be losing their equity. That's what we're trying to get at.
It seems to me there's three members of this committee, myself, Senator Olson, and Senator Saxock. We've had Ainsworth close three board plants in our districts. And the reason they closed them is because nobody's building new houses. Now, it seems to me that part of the idea here is to get the value of homes up so people will actually start building again. Isn't that correct? And so this is not only about getting home values back up, but it's about putting people back to work, too.
Well, Mr. Chairman, absolutely. Housing, I don't know if everybody agrees that housing took us down here, but there's a lot, big, well, strong argument that housing is what triggered the economic collapse we've seen.
There was something like 29,000 workers in Minnesota that lost their jobs.
And so all those related industries and businesses to housing, of course, windows.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And we've seen, and we have a couple of those very large, more than two. We have a lot of window companies.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to, on the choice of counties, I've seen it with other programs in the city of Minneapolis, and I know that best, so I'm going to talk about that, but it's also part of Hennepin County, and there are rural parts of Hennepin County as well. But when homes stabilize, if you get a few houses on a block that stabilize, that means the whole neighborhood starts stabilizing. So it affects a much bigger percentage in home values than it does in a smaller town or whatever. I'm not trying to diminish the fact that there's a need for it, but one of the things that it does is it, by stabilizing those home values in a metropolitan area in a broader, in a much more numbers, it also stabilizes the property tax base and in all of those homes. And I think it has much greater effect on the whole state to get those bottoms stabilized on the most homes possible. And I think the choice of counties, because it's including those metropolitan areas, will have the effect on more houses in a broader and broader neighborhoods, not just the ones that are getting the loans. So,
Senator Parisel hasn't spoken yet, so we'll go to Senator Parisel.
Oh, and I'll wait, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
Well, this discussion. Mr. Chair and Senator Kielash, I don't know without anyone actually being able to study that, because I can think of a counter argument, you know, that we're much better off spending all the money in the rural areas because it just takes far fewer house sales to stabilize the markets there, and people there generally have lower incomes. And, you know, so I think we can be making arguments in either way, depending on, because we're all good at that. Depending on where our constituents may lie and our concerns for those constituents. But again, I don't know exactly what percentage of the population of the state is encompassed in these counties. I'm guessing it's somewhere between 60 and 70% of the state population, probably closer to 70. And so to call this a pilot project when you're including the great majority of the state and leaving out the part of the state that's got the lower income people who can the lower average households, and perhaps having the net impact that you're going to stabilize prices in an area where people have higher household incomes, and you're going to have prices rise in areas overall where people don't have the ability to meet those mortgages. I guess I just think that's unfair. I think when you're this isn't what I would consider a pilot project when it impacts this large a percentage of the population, and I just think it's unfair unless it's allocated differently, or really what it needs to do, I think, is impact everyone, since everyone would be expected to have to pay for this if it ends up costing tax dollars.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, we're called state senators, Senator Olson, and so I vote quite often in this place for programs that help rural Minnesota, northern Minnesota, southeastern Minnesota, even southwestern Minnesota, Senator Kubley. If members feel strongly that you would may perhaps have the Housing Finance Agency decide what areas, where you could get the most, where you would have the greatest impact, that's fine with me. We somewhat arbitrarily chose these counties, because we know that they're, you know, I don't know what the foreclosure issues are, for example, in Stearns or Olmsted or even St. Louis. I know what they are in Hennepin and Ramsey, and they're profound. They're particularly profound in the community I represent, in that portion of Minneapolis that's next door to the district I represent. So if you'd feel more comfortable with that, I just don't think we can set aside enough money to make this statewide.
Well,
we may come back. If this starts to work and we see values going up, I think it will be a, what do you call it? Anyway, it'll spiral.
It'll snowball. But
snowball, thank you. That's
Senator,
a snowball, isn't
Senator,
it?
Well,
it will.
We still
and
have
will
some up there. So.
Oh, no.
But, Senator Olson, I think the point here is that this is a six-month program. And And if we want to find out if it's going to work, we actually have to have a high concentration of where the problem is in order to see whether or not it actually does have an effect. And if we put it in areas where it's a small concentration, you're not going to get a good indicator. That's based on a little bit I know about statistics. I think that's what we're trying to do here, isn't it? If it doesn't work where there's a lot of these foreclosures, it's not going to work statewide, and we're not going to go statewide with it. But if it does work in these areas where there's a lot of foreclosures, it's a pretty good indication that it'll work statewide. I would think we could wait 6 months to find out whether or not it's a good program. Isn't that the idea, Mr. Riegler?
Yes,
sir. Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, I'll just make one final comment because we may not agree on this, but if we're affecting 70% of the population already, then it seems like it's only 30% more in terms of dollars to affect everybody. And I think in terms of what you just said about it, you know, statistically, again, I'm not a statistician either, but it would seem to me that it's all relative to the percentages that you're talking about. I don't know why affecting, you know, one foreclosure out of five in this real small community is different than affecting 1,000 community or foreclosures out of 5,000 in this larger community. It's all based on percentages, and so the argument that you have to affect a certain percentage is no different. It's just on a smaller scale from my perspective.
Senator Parasol.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, along with the model for this particular program, when the farmers, what Mr. Bigler spoke about, when that occurred, this wasn't the only model that prevailed then. There was a farmer mediation program going on the side, and there were a lot of people trained to be, I don't want to say counselors, but they did sort of some counseling between the two entities to try to resolve some of the problems, and it was quite successful. So I don't, you know, I think it helped to smooth the way for the model to work. And I think that maybe it would be very valuable to include something like that in this, because it's the same situation. If you're going to lose your property, you might need some help with some advice here and there. And maybe the guy next door is in the same, so what kind of advice can he give you?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Shire.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think it would directly relate to this. It complements, I think, our overall concern for housing and values and foreclosures and that whole housing arena. But the next bill that I have before the committee has to do with mediation for homeowners. But I also believe that we passed off the Senate floor an extension of the farmer lender mediation as well. I think that sunsets this summer, and I think we passed off the floor that extension. But Senator Parasol is right. I mean, that was very helpful in the 80s as well.
Senator Saxon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to reiterate what you said, and that's we've got a six-month pilot here. I represent rural Minnesota, a part of the state. You know, I've spent most of my life there, and we know that we're steady up there. You know, it might be at 14% unemployment, but we're steady. And if you're going to – I think if we're going to find out if a pilot works, we need to be down here where the engine is, you know, where we're boom and bust and basically we're going to find out if stabilizing our real estate values is going to really make a difference. And so I would agree with what you had to say.
Okay. Let's put Senator Scheid's lead-all amendment in front of us, okay?
I'll so move that.
Okay, so – Senator Metzen moves the A5. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion adopted. Okay.
Move the bill.
Okay. Hang on. What's Senator, that what's this amendment? One?
Why was it? Did she put A6?
Is there an A6?
A6 amendment?
I'm sorry. It's in here.
What's the A6?
That's in the stack.
Okay, here it is.
Yes.
Senator Scheid, yes. You want to explain one. That?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, that's in... the last, was it the last committee you were in? Oh, you know what it was. I think it was in rules because this was a late bill. And Senator Langseth raised a concern about the values because they looked like they were more metropolitan values. And he talked about homes of lower value in greater Minnesota, in rural Minnesota. And so this is to address that concern that we aren't discounting somebody just because the house. I think we had 75,000. So this would say an appraised value of no less than 30,000, and so that is what. And then no higher than 74,999. In other words, not up to 75. This is just adding language, I think. And then this covers that if the average property value in that municipality is in that range. So I don't know if you did. I mean, if you were to find a $30,000 property in the city of Minneapolis, there may not be much of a house left. The land may be well worth more than that. And I'm not sure that that's what we're trying to encourage. We're trying to encourage the average value, if you will. I don't mean to use that term average technically, but just the typical, I guess, value for a community. And so that, I believe that that's what we have.
So it still goes up to 300.
Oh, so this just depends on where it is. Okay, so it has a different standard depending upon where it is.
Right.
So we should include this in the bill just because it makes the bill more flexible, right?
Yes.
Okay, so then Senator Sparks moves the A6 amendment. All those in favor?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Jensen.
On the A6 amendment, lines 7 and 8, we already had an oral amendment to make that appropriated in fiscal year 9 from the general fund.
Had you already done that?
So we don't need lines 1.7, 1.8?
Right, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so Senator Sparks,
also, Mr.
go
Chairman,
ahead.
Excuse me. Page 3, line 35, there's a blank amount on...
Oh, I thought we incorporated that. We incorporated that into the A5 amendment, didn't we?
No. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. You can do the A6, and then I'll come back.
Okay, all right. Okay, so we're going to, on the A6, we'll be moved by Senator Sparks without lines 1.7 and 1.8, okay?
Okay.
Correct?
Yes.
Okay, does everybody understand that? Incorporated into the A6 amendment, we will not have lines 1.7, 1.8. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion adopted. And then on the A5 amendment, on line 3.31, after the dollar sign, insert 70,000. Okay. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Aye. Opposed, motion adopted.
Okay. Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Jensen.
On line 35, there's a blank amount for the application fee. And in the fiscal note, it says $90.
Okay, so.
Is that what?
I think that's what we should put in there.
All right, then if that's what the fiscal note assumed.
Because, Mr. Chairman, I think that makes it neutral then, that covers the amount of money that we're appropriating here. So.
Okay. All right, then on line 3.35, after the dollar sign, insert 90. All of, on 3.35, for an application fee. Senator Metzen moves that amendment. All of the favor signify by saying aye.
Now I have ownership of this.
Okay. Okay, are there any further comments on the bill? If not, then Senator Metzen moves that the A5, as delete everything A5 amendment for Senate Files 2010, as amended, be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion is adopted. Okay, thank you, Senator Scheid. You have another bill now. Do you have time to
do? Chairman, do you have to move the bill?
I just did. I just did move it.
Sorry, I thought
because it was a delete. It was a delete everything amendment to the bill. So this became the bill, and I moved it.
I wanted to.
Okay.
I did move it to finance.
Chairman, you still have other bills?
Yes, we have yours.
Another bill from me?
Yes, we have one more from you.
Too late.
Do you have time? Or
Mr. Chairman, no. Because
we can do Senator Bonhoff's bill if you have to leave and come back.
If you could do this other one, I think that would be helpful.
Did you, Mr. Chair, did you vote? Did we vote on the bill?
Yes, we just moved the bill out of here. Senator Scheid, do you want to? We moved to the finance. It's still in the finance committee.
I just wanted to it clear that I had nothing to do with this.
Well, we can. I asked for comments before we voted, and I called the vote, so I don't know what else I'm supposed to do up here.
Right.
Senator Scheid, do you want to do Senate File 340?
Mr. Chairman, please.
Okay.
And this relates to something I just mentioned in our conversation of the previous bill. This is an idea that has come from the Minnesota Attorney General's office, and it applies the program of farmer lender mediation that we did in the 80s to a mediation system, if you will, a process for homeowners, homesteaded property owners. And it will work a little differently, I guess, but you have before you, and it has been a work in progress as well. I think, do you have the second engrossment?
Yes.
Chairman?
Yes.
And
we do.
Then I do have an amendment. Really, I suspect that your whole concern with this bill really has to do with Article 2, which has to do with the funding mechanism. But we have been working and negotiating and talking to all kinds of people trying to get Article 1 working better. So there is an A23 amendment. Do you have that?
Do we have that?
And that's the
You want to go ahead and explain the A23 while it's being handed out? Go ahead.
You know, Mr. Chairman, I think I might have Mr. Frichte from the AG's office do that, if you don't mind.
Mr. Frichte?
Because he has seen it more recently than I have. So.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the A23 amendment.
Mr. Frichte, just say your name for the record.
Oh, Kermit Frichte with the Office of the Attorney General. I'm an Assistant Attorney General.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, the A23 amendment has several changes to the bill. Probably first and foremost, it requires homeowners requesting mediation to first undergo foreclosure prevention counseling. That is unsuccessful, then the counselor will give the homeowner form to request mediation. I think also, as Senator Scheid said, it is a work in process. It's designed to bring the timeline for mediation and counseling to the timeline that is currently being used and been testified to by the various financial institutions that's currently being followed. So it's designed to allow the foreclosure process to continue up until approximately 6 weeks and 1 day prior to the sheriff's sale. There are also one of the other changes also allows mediations to be conducted, including the initial mediation meeting by telephone. We're aware that that was a big issue for a lot of folks, and it allows the mediator to have the discretion to require someone to appear in person, but the way the bill is written, it would have the vast majority of the mediation meetings to be conducted by telephone. I think, finally, there is a change in the bad faith section. It removes the court supervision from bad faith. And I know there was a lot of discussion about making the penalties for bad faith mirror each other or be somehow equal, and we believe that this bill does that now. Also, importantly, the expiration date on the Homestead Lender Mediation Act has been shortened to July 1st of 2012.
And Senator Scheid, this makes Article 1 work better? Is that what I'm understanding
Mr.
here?
Mr. Chairman, yes, it does. I don't know if you recall that last year we had legislation that provided counseling, and we had quite a large bill that detailed how that would work, offering counseling for people who were faced with foreclosure. This bill needed some work to mesh those two processes, so you get the counseling first and you don't go to mediation without having been through the counseling, so you come to mediation prepared, you know what you need. And so we needed to work on the time frame, and we were kind of lengthening the process. This is actually, this amendment, I think, is getting that those numbers more in line with what we have today for the foreclosure process. A very long foreclosure process in Minnesota. And, you know, we have a redemption period after a sheriff's sale where someone can stay in their home and be there up to 6 months. So that doesn't always happen, but they have the ability, the right to do that in many circumstances, in most circumstances. So this, we wanted to not, because it's a long process already, we didn't want to make it even longer. And I think that this language, these numbers help constrict it more.
Does anybody else need to comment on this amendment? Mr. Jensen?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, does this change the fiscal note for this bill? We have...
Mr. Chairman, I don't think so. I mean, I have an amendment, actually, about talking about how we pay for it that I'd like to have the committee discuss, but
okay.
I don't think so. It doesn't.
I don't see anybody rushing up to the table. So,
actually, Mr. Chairman, it does take away any of the judiciary. So, yes, it would have an impact there. It would be less for the judicial piece of it because we took... is taken out the court-supervised mediation.
Are there any questions from the committee on the 823 amendment? Any comments? Senator Kielash will move the 823 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. Okay, now what part of the bill are we concerned about here?
Mr. Chairman, I think Article 2. And there's an A24 amendment, and it's my understanding that that's been agreed to. Is that... And this has to do with who will. So you have to go back now to the second engrossment to look at this, where this is on the last bill. And it has to do with who's in charge of the account. And it looks to me like it will be, the account is created in the Treasury and shall be administered now by the Minnesota Housing Finance Authority instead of the Attorney General. And that, I believe, is agreed to. I haven't talked to anybody, but Mr. Frickte tells me that's the truth. So I'm saying that to you. And then the other language, it just kind of
what account?
Clarifies that, makes it clear that this money will be... The account will be administered by the House of
Representatives. Senator Olson, on the 824?
No, Mr. Chair, it goes more specifically to the bills. So.
Okay, let's, on the comments on the 824, let's have that in front of us right now, and then we'll go to the bill. Anybody have any comments or questions on the 824 amendment?
Well, is there money in the 824 amendment?
No.
There's no money in this.
It looks to me like all it does is change around who has control of the money, not the money.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Okay. All right. Then Senator Kielash moves the 824 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion adopted. Okay. Senator Olson, you had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this, Senator Scheid, this is a question, and I apologize I haven't followed up with this, but it's a question I asked when I heard this bill presented in an earlier committee, and it's certainly nothing against the Attorney General's office, and I applaud them for coming forward with an idea for mediation to help with mortgage foreclosures, but we have several entities in the state that train and certified people to be different kinds of mediators and arbitrators and are already engaged in that process, and it's not through a government entity. And I just wonder if anyone has looked at whether it wouldn't be more cost-effective to ask one of those agencies to train and certify people to do this, where they could then be available statewide, and it wouldn't be an ongoing cost for the government to be involved with this program or process. I mean, why is this something the Attorney General's office should be doing, as opposed to how we handle other kinds of mediation in the state?
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to ask Mr. Fricke to comment, but we had this conversation with the Attorney General's office. They're going to be looking for mediators. They're going to be looking for retired judges. They're going to be looking for people who are already trained in mediation. There may be realtors. There are other people that have experience with it to have them conducted. So I don't know if you mean why is the Attorney General doing all the mediation. They won't be.
No.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scheid, no, that's not really what I meant. What I meant is we have these other agencies that certify mediators and do that training and do all of what you just described the Attorney General's mm-hmm. office is going to be doing. And there isn't an expense to taxpayers, and it's people who want the training and want to work as mediators who pay for that and do it. So I guess I'm just wondering, why do we need to increase the Attorney General's budget to do this function? Is there some specific reason why the Attorney General's office needs to be involved as opposed to one of these other certification agencies?
And in just what Mr. Fricke will comment, but Mr. Chairman and Senator Olson, I don't think the money now is going to be administered by the Attorney General, so it's not going into the Attorney General's account, if you will, or their funding. It would be set aside in the Treasury and administered by MHFA, but I'll let Mr. Fricke respond to how they'll get mediators.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, the Attorney General's office initially is going to be making a call to service. We're going to try to secure as many volunteer mediators as we can. The bill as it's written and as it's budgeted, the Attorney General's office isn't going to be certifying mediators at all. What we will be doing is soliciting as many mediators as possible, folks trained in finance, negotiation, law, real estate. And these are people who may have already undergone mediation training through another division of the state, but many of them will be retired judges or attorneys, and there may also be people who, for example, have done mediations or arbitrations for other branches of the government. One of the issues that came up in an earlier committee was the use of the Office of Administrative Hearings, and I think their current hourly rate was $165 an hour. And while that may be appropriate in certain situations, that could be very expensive if that was the rate that was used in all of the mediations. So none of these people will be Attorney General's office employees.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair and Mr. Fricke, I do understand that. I didn't think they were. I guess I'm just saying that we have lists of people who are in every courthouse. There's a list of people who are certified to do different kinds of ADR, including mediation. And this may be a more specific kind that might need some additional training, but we already have entities out there that certify people to be mediators, and I guess I'm just wondering if there's a specific reason why the Attorney General's office needs to become involved in this process as opposed to just directing that the court have include on the list of mediators available people who are certified in this area, or have the people, the institutions that are already training people and setting up this list, do the same thing that you're suggesting the Attorney General's office is going to be doing. I'm just wondering if there's something about the Attorney General's office that makes this situation unique where they would be the ones, a reason for them to be doing this.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, the Attorney General's office at this time already mediates thousands of cases a year, including mortgage foreclosure cases, and it's an area that the office has experience in administering the programs. That's one of the reasons.
Senator Koch, do you have a question?
I'll wait, Mr. Chair.
Senator Kielash.
Senator Scheid, my question has to do with the funding. You've got a $50 fee. I'm just curious as to how that's breaking down. Is that an increase in that, and has this been through the tax committee, or where? I mean,
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I'm going to offer an amendment that if you pass it, it will take the bill to the Tax Committee. So I don't know if you want to go to that right now, because I think that this committee would be concerned about the funding source, and that's what we're prepared to discuss. So it's the A-20, I think.
Senator Saxon.
This is before the A-20, before we talk about money? Or?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I'm just wondering, Mr. Chair, and Senator Scheid and Mr. Fricke, are all institutions issuing mortgages going to be involved in this? If you issue a mortgage and there's a foreclosure?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, as the counseling goes, yes, that applies to everybody who's made loans, you know, our lending institutions in the state, and then this would apply to anybody who's foreclosing on a loan by a Minnesota homestead property owner. Mortgage. Right. The exemption is, and I don't know if other if members had received something from the community bankers, and Mr. Skilbert is here. I don't know if everybody received a letter from him, but he said that all those lenders who had been part of the TARP had received, quote, bailout money from the feds would be exempt, but that's not true. It's only if their mortgage, the exemption from who would not qualify would be somebody, I can't use the term Obamanized, but who had received a restructuring or reworking of their loan, if it had been modified by that federal program that the president announced, I don't know if it was early beginning of March. That's home affordability HAMP, and well, it's in here, and I knew what page it was on because I just read it. It's in the amendment, the first amendment you did. There.
Mr. Chair, Senator Shea, you're talking about applicability?
Applicability.
on 5.5 or what?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, yes, thank you. On 5.5 of the A-23, which was the Article 1 replacement, if you will. Yes, so the home affordable refinance or home affordable modification programs were the ones that President Obama spoke of. I think he was in Tucson or someplace in Arizona, maybe when he had made the announcement in early March, that it loans that had been backed up by Freddie or Fannie and also would be refinanced where people were underwater, and also where people, I think they're offering a subsidy to the lender based on the qualification of the borrower and their loan-to-value the loan-to-value ratio. Maybe Mr. Fricke can explain that. But if they've participated in that, they would not qualify for mediation. Those are the only people that we've taken out of here. And I haven't heard of one person yet having had that done, so I don't know how that's moving along. But if their loan is rewritten by the lender and it's subsidized by the feds and et cetera, then they go into foreclosure, they still can't make it, they would not qualify for this.
Senator Saxon?
Well, I don't know, are these toxic assets? Or, I mean, what are we talking about here that's exempted? I mean, Mr. Chair and Senator Scheid and Mr. Fricke, I'm just wondering about these exceptions. I mean, and why they're exempted, and consequently, you know, who will be exempted in the future? That's
maybe
Fricke.
Mr. Fricke could.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Saxhog, the bill is designed to exempt mortgages and homeowners who have had their loan reworked once already through a government program. They don't get a second bite at the apple through the Minnesota Mediation Program. Those are the loans that are exempted. So if a countrywide loan, although potentially eligible for a government modification, if there is no modification, that loan would be eligible for mediation in Minnesota, But if the borrower had it modified once through the federal government program, they would not be eligible for mediation under this program.
Okay. Senator Fischbach.
I'll pass.
Okay. Senator Shy, do you have another amendment?
Mr. Chairman, I do, and it's not without its own controversy, but you know what I'm reading. That hasn't stopped me yet, right? Mr. Chairman, the A20. I shared with the Attorney General's office, not Mr. Frichte, but others and the Attorney General herself, that I wasn't real keen on the way they proposed to finance this. And I don't think, I think it's safe to represent the response I got was they didn't really love it either, but it seemed like, they didn't say it seemed like an easy target, but it does seem like an easy target when it has to do with housing, when it gets brought up quite a bit around here. It's for recording fees, and it's found this money. I guess it starts. I'm sorry.
Members,
it's Article 3.
Members, if you look on page 17,
yes,
this amendment will delete pages all the new language on pages 17 through 22, Articles 1, 2, and 3.
Sections
1, 2, and 3, yeah.
Mr. Chairman, this was one of those off-the-top-of-my-head things, but I think it may be something that's really reasonable. Everybody who owns property in Minnesota, and obviously, arguably the whole nation, but we're talking about Minnesota, everybody is affected by foreclosures. The value, I don't know. I mean, there may be a home here or there that it hasn't had from all the foreclosures around them. But I think, for the most part, all are paying a price right now for these massive numbers of foreclosures in the communities. They are, to say nothing of the social costs. There are public safety costs.
Taken out.
There's.
Sections 1, 2,
of foreclosed property.
Article 3.
This says everybody and the businesses are affected when people lost their home and can't afford to do business with people in the community. Everybody who owns property would pay, be it $1. That obviously can be adjusted upward or downward on every parcel of real property. So it's kind of like you have.
Well,
Senator
Shide, it looks to me like you made this significantly more simple.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think so. I know the counties don't think so. But
that little paragraph seems way more simple than three pages of junk or five pages of.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it spreads out the burden, and I don't think a dollar. Well, I don't ever want to be quoted as saying a dollar isn't a burden for someone, but it's a minimal burden. And the burden on people who are recording documents related to their mortgage, et cetera, and buying a home, I don't think they should be loaded up on. And so that's why I am suggesting this.
And do you have any idea what the change in revenue might be?
I think there's 0.7 million properties in Minnesota. And that would be $2.7 million, and this takes out 5%, and so there's about 2.5 something available. $2,573,000
in fiscal 10. Senator
Vanderveer. Mr. Chair, I'd move to divide the amendment. Line 12 after the number 3, and vote on them separately, and ask for a roll call.
You want to vote?
No, he just wants to do this. This is what he wants.
Explain that to me again, Ms.
We'd like on the A20 amendment on line 1.3.
Is that how you?
I think you want it 1.2.
1.2, yes. After the number 3 would be the first.
So
part of the amendment.
So you want to vote on whether or not to delete pages 17 to 22, and then you want to vote on. Am I understanding you right? Explain to me what you want to do.
I would like to vote on deleting the section 1 to 3, and then a separate vote on adding the dollar.
All right.
Well, Mr. Chair, could Senator Vandiver explain the purpose of what he's trying to delete? So kind of in a nutshell, we understand what the purpose of the amendment would be.
Senator Vandiver?
We're trying to delete the new taxes.
Dear Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Chairman, may I ask, Senator Vandiver, you want to delete the dollar on all property owners, or do you want to delete the recording fees? I'm deleting the recording fees in my...
In your amendment, yes, but they're being replaced with the new fee, and I would like to delete both of them.
So he doesn't want... So you want to take away the funding for the program? Yeah, I understand.
Well, I think we funded the program. I think if you look at the deed taxes and filing fees, they've gone up. They've probably tripled in the last 4 or 5 years. So I think we've funded them.
Mr. Chairman, that's what I said essentially. You said it better, but that's why I'm taking them out of the bill. But I would replace it with the buck.
And members would have an opportunity to do.
Yes.
Unless there's a different way.
Yes.
Senator Olson. So Senator,
Mr. Chair,
in other words, Senator Vandiver, if you get your way, what you want to do is you want to keep the deletion of sections 1, 2, and 3, and then you would like to vote no on the rest of the amendment. Is that what you're thinking?
I may want to vote no. I mean.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Olson.
Just to clarify then, in a nutshell, what Senator Vandiver, I guess I'm just wondering if Senator Vandiver is against this program since he would be deleting all the funding for the program, or if he has a different method of how it would be paid for, because we obviously can't have the program and have no costs unless we somehow change something about the language. So what would the point be of even having the bill if there's no way to pay for it?
Maybe if we're going down this road, we could discuss how are we paying for mediation right now, which I believe we've appropriated money for that.
Senator Olson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I can answer that. How we pay for mediation for other kinds of things is basically we have those agencies I was talking about are entities within the state that train mediators, and then the judges have a list of court-appointed or approved mediators, and if someone wants to use them, then they go to that list, but then the parties involved have to pay for the mediators themselves. That's how the situation is.
Mr. Chair and Senator Scheid, I do believe we have appropriated money directly. Homeowners, aren't we funding the nonprofits that are doing the counseling, the foreclosure counseling? Do they pay for
it? Mr. Chairman? Folks from the Housing Finance Agency are saying they can request a court meeting. But maybe Ms. Orr will.
Mr. Chair, Senator Vandiver, there is a small state appropriation that funds homebuyer counseling and foreclosure prevention counseling. And my recollection is it's about $1.7 million, between $1.7 and $1.8 for the federal government. The federal government in the last 2 years has funded foreclosure prevention counseling that Minnesota has received about $4 million each year in the last 2 years to fund foreclosure prevention counseling. That is it's a year-to-year thing now. And so the vast majority of the counseling is paid for either from philanthropic or the banks help contribute or the federal government. The state appropriation is relatively small.
But there are funds that are available and being utilized for the counseling. And
okay, so members, so Senator Vandiver wants two votes on the amendment, and that's fine. And so if you think the whole amendment should pass, you would vote yes on both amendments. And if you think one or the other part of the amendment should not pass, then you would vote no. Okay. So do you want a roll call on both? And
let's not roll call the second one.
So what do you want to vote?
Let's
on?
Not
roll call the first.
Now we better roll call the first one. Second one, we don't need to.
So do you want? So do you want a roll call on? You want a roll call on lines.
One point two.
Right. Okay.
Yes. The first.
All right. Does everybody understand what's going on here? Mm-hmm.
He's moving to delete it.
Yeah.
No. He's dividing the amendment.
Dividing it.
He's dividing the amendment.
We're going to do what the amendment does, just one piece at a time.
Yes, exactly. But
Senator Olson?
But, Mr. Chair, if Senator Vandiver's motion is to delete line 1.2, then he will keep in all the fees because the amendment takes the fees out.
No, he's not. Mr. Chair, Senator Olson, he is not moving to delete 1.2. He is moving to divide the amendment on line 1.2 after number 3, so that there are now two amendments. There's an amendment that reads pages 17 to 22, delete sections 1 to 2.
Oh, 1 to 3.
1 to 3, excuse me, thank you. And then the other one, which is section 1.
Okay, and Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if that's where we would typically divide an amendment or not, because if the first one passes and the second one, no, the first one fails and the second one passes, you'd have two homestead lender mediation accounts. But just, I doubt that will happen. Like it won't happen.
Mr. Chair?
I was trying to get an opinion from council if this is a good spot to delete an amendment, and I'm not sure if it is or not. But
Mr. Chair,
I think both parts of the amendment relate to each other. So
are we voting on Senator Vandiver's amendment to divide it first?
No, he can make that motion.
Okay,
and then
thank
we have
you.
To divide on that. The issue is, if you're in favor of the 820 amendment, you'd vote yes twice here. Okay. All right.
And Mr. Chair, are you going to instruct us if we don't support her, how we should vote, too? I'm just teasing you, Mr. Chair.
Because these division things always confuse me, so I'm trying to explain it, and I think I got it right. So does anybody have an opinion in council whether or not this amendment is divisible?
Mr. Chair, I think if we're having a problem with that division, maybe Senator Vandiver could just do an oral amendment to do what he wants to do as far as deleting sections 1 to 3 and then separately voting on the other piece. But I think this could work, I guess.
All right. Okay. Then you want to vote on line 1.2 first, Senator Vandiver?
Please, Mr. Chair.
And you want a roll call? Okay. We'll take a roll.
Ready? Thomasoni.
Yes.
Sparks.
No.
Vote.
Fishback.
Yes.
Kielash.
Yes.
Koch.
Yes.
Kugli.
Yes.
Olson.
Yes.
Pariseau.
Yes.
Saxon.
Yes.
Hardin.
Yes.
Vandiver.
Yes.
9-1.
Yeah, the motion prevails 9-1. Now on the lines 1.3 through 1.18.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator.
Mr. Chairman, if I might ask Christine Berger from the Minnesota Association of Realtors to speak.
Absolutely.
She's on the list here someplace. There she is.
She's scary. She
say your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Christine Berger, and I represent the Minnesota Association of Realtors. And we would like to encourage you to support the Scheid Amendment to add the $1 property fee to all property types. This foreclosure problem has really become a societal problem. And I think Senator Scheid said it best when she said that foreclosure is coming to a house near you. We've all lost equity because of this. Earlier, there was a gentleman talking about how market values have fallen from $230,000 to $150,000, at least in the Twin Cities. And we think that this is a societal problem, and so everyone in society should contribute to help mediate the problem and stabilize our communities, stabilize our tax bases. And so we ask for your support on the Scheid Amendment.
Senator Coker.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair and Senator Scheid, you know, I keep hearing that argument, and I understand it because, frankly, in the area I live in, foreclosures are already on the street next to me. So I understand what you're saying. But it is the same argument that was used on a federal level for the TARP money, and $700 billion later and 6 months later, what do we have to show for it? We keep hearing that as an argument, and frankly, it's wearing a little thin on a lot of folks. We continue to pay and pay and pay, and we're told that this will fix it up, this will fix it up. And we're just, so I just have to speak for a lot of homeowners out there, a lot of taxpayers out there. We keep hearing that, and we're not seeing a lot for the money that we're paying. And so I just put my two cents in. It's wearing a little thin.
Ms. Hilden, you wanted to say something?
Very briefly, thank you, Mr. Chair. Nancy Hilden, and I'm here today on behalf of the Minnesota Land Title Association, basically closing agents, those who are sitting at the table when these transactions are occurring. And we fully support the position that has just been presented by the Minnesota Realtors Association. We think a uniform, simple, basic, spread-out fee is a preferred approach and would encourage you to support this amendment.
Any further comments? Senator Vandeveer.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think reasonable depends on what your options are, but I do think that this bill makes it more expensive to foreclose on properties. It makes it take longer, and it's going to add another surcharge or another fee or whatever for every house in the metro area, and we keep doing it every day. And so I think we have become part of the problem, is what I would say. So I think I would request a roll call on the second part of the amendment.
Any further comments, questions, discussions?
Well, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, if I might, just perhaps more in response to Senator Koch, this is very targeted. It's very specific. It will prevent some foreclosures, which will help communities and families. And we won't save everyone. We can't. But we aren't writing a check to somebody and say, do with it what you will. We have an actual program, a specific dollar amount, and it's a targeted program. I think it, and for a dollar a property, I think people can handle that.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, clerk will take the roll on the second part of the Vandeveer motion.
Tomasoni.
Yes.
Sparks.
No.
Dibble.
Yes.
Fishbach.
No.
Kielash.
Yes.
Koch.
No.
Kubli.
Yes.
Metzen.
Yes.
Olson.
No.
Pariseau?
No.
Saxhog?
No.
Vandeveer?
No.
So it's 7-4.
7-4.
Can I change my vote? Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair?
Motion does not prevail. Oh, okay. 5-7. Okay. Now we have the bill in front of us. Is there any further comments or questions on the bill? All right, then.
Mr. Chairman, do I understand that the bill no longer needs to be here? I mean, we took away the funding for the program?
The bill probably no longer needs to be here. That's probably true.
I was being facetious, of course.
That's probably the reason it came here, though.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was hoping you'd see fit to fund it.
Well, and, I tried.
I know. Thank you.
Senator Olson.
Well, Madam Chair, there might be some of us who just think that this should be looked at a little bit different who still are supporting the proposition. So if we can move this forward, I mean, aren't we still going to take a vote on the bill?
Yeah, we're going to move the bill to the finance the bill never really ever leaves finance, just so you know, but we're going to take a vote on the bill. It may not work anymore, but we're going to take a vote on the bill. So.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Is there any, if Senator Olson is proposing that it go back for more work, is there any value to laying it on the table here and allowing Senator Scheid to come back with us?
Chairman?
Senator Scheid.
Mr. Chairman, I can't think of any more fair way to fund this program. If you don't think that the program needs funding, I understand that because you don't want it to work. But what could be more fair than asking everybody who owns property, whose property value is being affected by the foreclosure crisis we're in, what could be more fair than asking everybody to participate in that? And, there may be a more fair way, but I don't know what it is unless it...
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't think that was fair. No, it doesn't. No, it doesn't mean that I don't want the program to work. It means that, you know, how many times do we have to pay for it? And I think to put it more fairly, that the people that I represent are being stretched on their ability to pay for it. And even a dollar. We need to be a little more cautious as to how we spend their money. Put it that way.
Senator Scheid.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the program does need to be funded. And I don't think there's enough money currently to do that. And so I think the agencies, the Attorney General's office, would tell you they don't have the resources within the funding that we give them now to do this. So effectively, it wouldn't function. But maybe the full committee will think it's worth funding.
Okay. Well, I think what we do here is then we'll move the Senator Kielash will move that Senate File 340 as amended be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Finance. Is there any discussion on that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion is adopted. Okay. Thank you, Senator Scheid.
Chairman, thank you for your time. And I want to thank Senator Sparks, not for his vote on my bill, but for helping earlier.
I like the way you funded it the first time, Senator Scheid.
With Senator Bonhoeff's.
He's going to be Senator Bonhoeff now, too.
You know, Mr. Chairman, I was going to do it, and then we realized I wasn't
on the bill.
An author on the bill. So
You like that kind of help from Sparks? I'm missing something here.
Hey, Senator Bonhoeff, Sparks.
You got the MinCare bill.
No working. My bottle of gas is not going to work anymore.
As it is.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
Get it. Called? What division report are we adopting here?
Right here.
I know it wasn't. Okay, so here's.
So.
What's this? Thank you. So excited.
Oh, this is. Senator Sparks.
Where'd he go?
Where'd Sparky go?
He's morphing.
He's coming around the bend there.
He gets praised by the author. She votes against him.
I'm sorry. Yeah. Now he's going
to. Senator Sparks, first we have to move the division report from Senator Berglund. So Senator Sparks will move the division report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion adopted. Okay. Okay, Senator Sparks.
She whispered.
Senator Sparks, Senate File 347.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, Senate File 347 was a Senator Bonhoff bill, but I'm going to sit down on it. It deals with Minnesota Care temporary cover for unemployed persons. Section 1 deals with, just kidding. Actually, Lee Nelson, the Director of Legal Affairs, is here to walk you through the bill.
Mr. Nelson, why don't you just take us through the part that this committee would be interested in?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am Lee Nelson. I am the Director of Legal Affairs for the Unemployment Insurance Program. Just let me say that we have worked with Senator Bonhoff on this bill and the Department of Human Services in crafting this bill. And what an individual will do when applying for unemployment benefits, they will be asked if they wish to apply for Minnesota Care coverage. It will be informed that if they do so, 10% of their weekly unemployment benefits will be deducted in order to help pay some of the cost. The Department of Employment and Economic Development, after asking a series of questions, will determine whether an individual is eligible, will notify the Department of Human Services, who will in turn notify the applicant that coverage is available, and but as I indicate, 10% of an individual's weekly unemployment benefit will then be placed in a special fund. In addition to the 10% of an individual's weekly unemployment benefits, if they choose to do that, is a fee on employers. The fee placed on employers is collected with their unemployment taxes. The fee would be 0.1% on the first $26,000 of wages paid per worker in 2010. Well, actually, been the first $27,000 of wages paid in 2010. That new fee will raise approximately $50 million each year for the 2 years that this program is in place. That $50 million per year will be placed in the same account from which the Commissioner of Human Services will then pay the cost of, or deduct and pay the cost of MinCare coverage for the workers. That's essentially what this bill does, and I understand the jurisdiction of the committee over the question of an additional fee on employers to pay the health care coverage cost and a deduction from the workers' weekly unemployment benefits.
Okay. Senator Cook.
Mr. Chair and either Senator Sparks, I don't know, or Mr. Nelson. Here's my question. This is for... You know, I appreciate what Senator Bonhoff is trying to do in this bill and understand it. But if we're looking at expanding some Minnesota care coverage, and I understand there's a surplus in the health care access account, why are we going to increase the taxes on business instead of using some funds from the health care access account?
So do you have an opinion on that, Mr. Nelson?
Or Senator Sparks, or somebody, why aren't we dipping into that surplus fund?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Koch, I believe in Senator Berglund's committee, she stressed repeatedly that she did not feel there was an excess in that account. She felt that account is scheduled to go into deficit in the not too distant future, and it was her opinion that the funds would not be available. I believe that was what she stated in committee.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Fischbach, I guess, you know, whether a person agrees or disagrees with it, I think the rationale would be something like this. I mean, we have a minister. Oh, Senator Koch.
That's okay, Senator Olson. I wasn't asking if you want to make some argument on it, but okay.
Well, I guess
you're on that committee,
well,
though, right?
Yeah, and I was on that committee. So basically, you know, we have a program set up for working poor people, and that's called Minnesota Care.
And it does. It is eventually scheduled to be in a structural deficit if we project the according to what our financial people are telling us. If we want to do something for people who are unemployed, sort of like extending unemployment benefits, we would be giving them health care benefits they're not normally entitled to under the parameters of this fund. And so that's the reason. It's something to do as a temporary kind of emergency thing for unemployed people, but not at the expense of the working poor people whose money is going to run out of this fund. I think that's the rationale.
Well, Senator Vanderveer. Mr. Chair and Senator Olson, maybe you could help me with this, because it was my understanding that the unemployment fund was also slated to go into a huge deficit. And I supported the extension of the unemployment, which puts a surcharge on my business, which isn't doing extremely well right now. So, we're going to do that to businesses. I'm wondering what impact this will have.
Mr. Chair, Senator Vanderveer, I think the difference there is that that's an kind of a pay-as-you-go type of fund, mm-hmm. So that it's not something that does go into a deficit. It's something that, if it does, the next year it gets made up, because that's the way it's like an insurance program. You pay based on your experience rating. So
no.
That's the difference, I think.
Mr. Chair, I think that's incorrect. This is coming from the Workforce Development Fund, which is the 0.1% currently on unemployment. So it's not an automatic. It can be, correct, Mr. Nelson? It can be increased by but it doesn't automatically refill?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Quote. What this bill does, and it gets fairly complex as to why it was structured the way it is, it was actually structured to save the Workforce Development Fund about $700,000 in collection costs. What this bill does is actually suspend the Workforce Development fee for 2 years, place a new fee on employers of 0.2%. Once the money's collected, 1/10 of it, 1/2 of it would be put in the Workforce Development Fund and the other in a Health Care Access Fund. And from the Health Care Access Fund, the Commissioner of Human Services would then pay the cost of MnCare. What this does in actuality is it increases the amount available to the Workforce Development Fund of $700,000. But what the bill would do is increase the cost on all Minnesota businesses essentially $26 a worker. Every Minnesota for-profit business would pay an additional $26 a worker in tax, paying the cost of this. It also the bill does provide, that if it's determined that the amount collected, this $50 million per year, is more than sufficient to cover the costs, then the fee can be lowered even on a quarterly basis so that it doesn't collect more than is necessary to cover the cost of MnCare for the unemployed workers.
And part of the issue is how many workers would actually apply for it, right?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, that's what is somewhat unknown. I believe the fiscal note is out there, and Department of Health can give a reasonable estimate of the number of individuals who would meet the eligibility criteria, which means they don't otherwise have health care coverage available and don't have COBRA coverage available and don't have spousal care coverage available. But what we don't know is how many people will voluntarily elect to have their unemployment benefits essentially reduced by 10% to pay for this. That's kind of an unknown. And so work with the Department of Human Services and simply came up with a reasonable estimation of how many people would then choose this coverage and then what the cost of that coverage would be.
So, Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure I understand this. What you're going to do is you're essentially doubling that 0.10 to 0.20. You're suspending one of them and putting in a higher one. Is that what you're doing?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Vanderveer, exactly.
Okay. Thank you.
Senator Fischbach.
And Mr. Chair, I think it's also important to point out that this new charge to businesses is in addition to the taxes they will see in the tax bill. This is outside of what is already being discussed downstairs. So this will be added on to all of that, too, that they will be experiencing in that bill.
Okay. Senator Parasol.
And, Mr. Chairman, on top of those answers that to the just previous questions are, is sub 9, expiration date is July 31 in year 11, 2011.
That's a good point. Like, there's lots of expiration dates here.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Nelson, sorry.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Parasol, what that provides is no new enrollees.
I see.
So it's a five-month program, which you don't want to, so you can enroll people up to that, but then everyone who's in it stays in it for a five-month duration. So that's why we didn't want new enrollees, because the fee stops on December 31st, essentially. So you don't want, in effect, then you have to keep the fee on because you have more people still in the program. Mm-hmm. But those who enroll by June 30th, 2011 would then stay in the program for up to their five-month duration.
So
that's
this,
why it was timed the way
this
it
fee
is.
Blinks off then, too, right?
Mr. Chairman, yes, the fee blinks off. At,
how do you continue to fund
on
it?
December 31st, 2000.
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, Senator Sparks, or any whoever might know, does this fee have a fiscal savings impact? Because it, you know, was it was there a fiscal note that took into consideration that the availability of this would prevent some people from getting into some of the other programs that the government has to pay for? So is this a savings, or is this just something we're doing for people who have lost their jobs?
Nelson?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Olson, I believe that question was asked in Senator Berglund's committee, and I believe the latest fiscal note from the Department of Human Services was to take all that into account as best they could determine. But that was drafted by Department of Human Services. You kind of have to ask them. I can't answer specifically, but I knew that was under the direction by Senator Berglund to take that into account when they redid their fiscal note.
Senator Cook.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just, Mr. Nelson, if you could please repeat, what would be the annual additional cost to businesses? You said 50. Was it $50 million? Was that over the life of this program, or?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Koch, it would be $50 million a year. The total cost of this program would be just under $100 million for the two-year period.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Nelson.
Okay. Any other comments or questions? Seeing none, then Senator Sparks moves that Senate File 347. We didn't amend it, right? We recommend the pass be referred to the Committee on Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion is adopted. Okay. Kev.
Does not prevent.
We have a plan for.
I don't think so.
Anything else here?
Mr. Chair, members, I believe next week we will be discussing the arts and cultural heritage piece of the legacy amendment.
And is it possible for more bills to come through here?
No.
It's always possible for more bills to come through here, Mr. Chair.
All right. Good work today, committee. Thank you very much. Meeting adjourned.